Coming up this time, the incredible impact of Clough, the miracle manager.
The thought we'd ever win the league was absolutely just beyond comprehension. So then when Cloughy came in 75, it just all changed.
When I was working for a living, Manchester United were the biggest club in Europe. They hated us. We had the audacity to beat them. Same with Liverpool. We knocked them out of the European Cup, they couldn't believe it.
There are memories of seeing Brian at the City Ground, not as a manager, but as a player.
That's amazing, really, to think when I was 9, 10 years old, I was watching the greatest manager that ever lived, starting on it, well, in the middle of his career, so it's something to remember, I think.
Plus, the tragic news that alerted media around the world.
There were TV vans, radio vans, reporters like I'd never really seen.
And the tireless fundraising for the magnificent bronze tribute in Nottingham.
Imagine how many badges we sold. I mean, we kept ordering more and more. And certain members of the committee were much better at badgering people to buy badges.
In this episode, you'll also hear an extract from one of the live Green Jumper events, which have been popular occasions for literary festivals and charity fundraisers.
I was working in London and I got a call from a colleague at Radio Derby who said, there's the chance to interview Brian Clough on Saturday morning. Would you be free? Would you be interested? And I thought, yeah, I can't turn that down, Mr. Clough. And then I said, yes, you know, what time is it? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, by the way, it's going to be live. And I thought, oh, dear, that's going to be tricky.
Thanks very much indeed. Don't forget I love you and be good.
All that's coming up on this episode.
Yes, this is the Green Jumper podcast with myself, Marcus Alton, the editor of the Tribute website, brianclough.com. And my guest today is someone who became the centre of media attention when Brian passed away in 2004 and was a vital part of the team behind the brilliant statue of Cloughy in Nottingham city centre. And for many years, he was also the chairman of the Nottingham Forest Supporters Club. It's hello to Paul Ellis. Great to see you.
Hello, Marcus. Good to be here.
Well, I think you can actually remember the first time you saw Brian Clough playing at the City Ground.
Yes, I mean, it's a long time ago. I guess it would be either 1958 or 1959 because my first ever game was in March 1958 and I know we were playing against Middlesbrough at that time. Now, I wouldn't like to say that I can remember him being outstanding or anything like that, but he was obviously playing on the City Ground at that point, so you know, that's amazing, really, to think when I was 9, 10 years old, I was watching the greatest manager that ever lived, starting on it, well, in the middle of his career. So, you know, it's something to remember, I think.
Were you chairman of the Supporters Club when he arrived at Forest?
No, I wasn't. So at that time, in 1975, it was obviously Mel Hart. I didn't really even get involved with the Supporters Club till much later, probably in the 1990s, and wasn't actually the chairman until after Brian had retired. So actually, yeah. I never met him.
That's the ironic thing, I guess.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Especially is what we're going to come and talk about in a minute, because obviously I was being asked by many, many radio and TV stations about him, but I'd never met him.
Yeah. Well, that's it. When he passed away in September 2004, many people can remember what they were doing at that moment that they heard the news. First of all, can you remember how you heard and where you were?
Yes, I can vividly remember. So obviously, by this time, I was the chairman of the Nottingham Forest Supporters Club. So obviously, with him dying, the media needed people to talk to, as you can imagine. So I was at work, and for some reason, I didn't notice that my phone had already rung two or three times, and I guess I was in the middle of something and perhaps not able to answer. But eventually, early afternoon, I believe, my wife actually rang me to say, did you know that Brian had passed away, and I think they want to talk to you? So then I looked at my phone and thought, crikey, yes, I've got six missed messages already. So I did ring somebody back, I can't remember who, and they said, well, could you come down to the City Ground? Luckily, I didn't have any other appointments that day, so I said to the team, I'll be gone, I might be back or I might not. Anyway, so I then went off down to the City Ground into the main stand car park, and there were TV vans, radio vans, reporters like I'd never really seen.
Yes.
And you then must have spent a long time just fielding all these media inquiries outside the ground.
Yes, and it happened to be, again, I will not forget the date he died, because that was actually my wife's birthday. And we were due to go out for a meal in the evening. So, yes, I thought, well, there's still plenty of time, but I just can't believe I must have spoken to every TV company in the UK and beyond, and every radio station from Radio 1, oddly, Radio 2, Radio 4, Radio 5 Live, obviously, Radio Nottingham, obviously, and some of the commercial radio stations as well, and all the TV stations. So, yes, I was probably a media celebrity for that day. But again, you know, I had to think what to say, and I couldn't really talk about him from a personal point of view, but obviously I could appreciate what he'd done for my team.
That's right, yes. And I guess in a way that helped to sort of skirt around the emotional side of it, because a lot of people were directly upset by it, weren't they? And they brought shirts and floral tributes and things on the day. What was the mood like?
Yes, I mean, very much it was a sombre day. And as you say, there were many tributes already starting to accumulate by those gates, and in fact, scarves tied to the gates and other memorabilia, shirts, etc. So yes, it was a sombre day, but I think it had to be, and the way I treated it was as a celebration of how wonderful he'd been, obviously, as a football player and manager, and particularly as a manager of my team. But also I could relate of how other people had told me what a wonderful person he was. You know, I do know of his help and things living in West Bridgeford. Obviously, he had the his newspaper shop on the West Central Avenue, and obviously he was often there. And people tell me of their wonderful interaction with him. I went in a few times, and he was never there. I mean, oddly, my son also worked in that shop.
Yes.
He can tell me many things,
yes,
but
yes,
not myself.
Yes, that's Chris, of course, Chris Ellis, and he's appeared on a previous episode where he's told us some stories of working with Cluffy and being rewarded with some chocolate bars and things.
Absolutely, yeah. So again, a younger member of my family can tell me many things that I couldn't tell him. So it was just, going back to that day, it was just unreal, really. And yes, I had obviously got, I'm not uncomfortable being interviewed, so I could think of something to say and was probably said most of the same things. But it did go on for 3 or 4 hours. So in the end, I rang my wife and told her to come to the car park, and we went for a meal from there. Where did we go? I don't remember.
Probably it was Trattoria Antonio on Trent Bridge, where Cluffy used to have his Italian meals.
Yes, maybe it was. I can't remember. So obviously it's a day I'll never forget.
Yes, definitely. Well, here's a little reminder of that day, because I've found an archive clip of you being interviewed on that day outside the City Ground. It's only very, very short, but have a listen to this.
you now look back and just can't believe it happened. It was so out of what I've been used to. I've been watching Forest for 45 years, so I'd been used to the bad times before that. To actually go through times when you were the best team in Europe was just something you couldn't understand.
There you go. I know it's short but sweet, really, which sort of sums up the impact Cluffy had.
It absolutely sums it up. And as I said then, I'd been watching from 1958 right through to 1975. And the only highlights for me were obviously when I was only 10, we won the cup final. So again, that's not really a fantastic highlight. My highlights were in the middle 1960s when I was a teenager. 17, 18, first of all, you know, getting out in the town, and that the town was electric in those middle 60s, 66, 67, particularly when Forest did better than they'd done for a long, long time, finishing second and obviously getting the semi-final of the Cup. So for me, that was a fantastic time. But that was it. And then I thought the thought we'd ever win the league, it was absolutely just beyond comprehension. So then when Cluffy came in 75, it just all changed.
Yes, yeah, times never to be forgotten. And after that day where you did all the interviews, I mean, it was only a short while after that, there was a civic tribute in the city centre and then the memorial service at Pride Park. Did you go to either of those?
I went into the square and was obviously just stood in the square amongst all the supporters and obviously appreciated that very much. Didn't get to Derby, to the to the memorial at Pride Park, but yes, it's sadder than that actual day, trying then to remember him. Yes, I realise people wanted to pay tribute, but for me that day was the day I did all those interviews.
Yes. Yeah, you certainly played your part, really, yeah, in paying tribute to him straight away. Well, you'll hear more from Paul Ellis later, but I thought you'd like to hear a little bit from one of the live Green Jumper presentations, which have been out and about at literary festivals and charity events. Here's an extract from one of them, where I'm asked about the circumstances leading up to one of my memorable interviews with Brian Clough.
What about early memories of interviews?
Yes. I think that the first interview I did with him was here in Derby, because I worked, obviously, alongside yourself at BBC Radio Derby for 5.5 years and enjoyed every single day. Looking back, it was my first contract as a radio journalist, and it really was a family atmosphere. And I remember I was working in London, and I got a call from a colleague at Radio Derby who said, there's the chance to interview Brian Clough on Saturday morning. Would you be free? Would you be interested? And I thought, yeah, I can't turn that down, you know, to interview Mr. Clough. And then I said, yes, you know, what time is it? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, by the way, it's going to be live. And I thought, oh, dear, that's going to be tricky. Because obviously, unpredictable, to sum him up. You never quite knew what you were going to get. And anyway, I agreed to do it. And it was a Clulows bookshop, if you remember Clulows, at the top of Iron Gate on the corner. And it was pouring down with rain, I remember. And I got this portable broadcasting kit over my shoulder, which, like a huge case with an aerial sticking up. And so I walked round and was taken through to the back room of Clulows, waited for Cluffy to arrive. And I heard the door open and heard that familiar voice. And I could tell that things hadn't gone particularly well that morning. And I thought, oh dear, this doesn't bode well. So I sort of waited in the back room and he was ushered through. And his mood did lighten when he saw me. It was probably, as he says in the interview, probably seeing my smiling face on a dismal morning.
Do
During the conversation, we also talked about the memorial service for Brian held at Pride Park.
But that was an incredible night, wasn't it?
It was.
In every sense.
Yeah.
We know that Derby and Forest really don't particularly get on, but the only thing that links them is Brian Clough Way, and Brian Clough is the only thing that really links the two. And I remember being dispatched by Radio Derby the day after Cloughy had died, and going on Radio Derby did the breakfast show outside the stadium. And one of the abiding memories that I've got is that at one of the railings sort of outside Pride Park, there was a Derby scarf and there was a Forest scarf tied together, because that's what Cloughy did.
Yes.
He put these two parochial football clubs on the map. But the night at Pride Park was, there were Derby fans there, there were Forest fans there, there were the great and good of sport and politics and so on. But the weather, the night, anybody else, were you there? Were you watching it? Were you listening to it? It was unreal.
It was, yeah. It was just pelting down with rain all night. And I was outside the ground reporting for Radio Nottingham. And I was interviewing fans, you know, both Derby and Forest as they were going into the stadium and getting absolutely soaked. And then it started to thunder and the lightning as well. And because I was with a radio car, which has a huge mast on the top. And I knew at that point, when the lightning came, that mast had to come down. So I had to sort of give up that and then go into the stadium. And as you remember, there was a gazebo on the pitch with the choir. And many years later, I interviewed the priest, Nicholas Henshaw, who was one of those that conducted the service. And he said that the problem was the seats were padded for the choir to sit on, and the rain just kept coming down and down, and these padded seats were like sponges. So they're in these posh robes and sitting on these seats, and he said the dry cleaning bill was enormous afterwards.
Just a short extract there from one of the live Green Jumper events, and you can find out more about them on the Tribute website, brianclough.com. And thanks to Derby Book Festival for the recording. But now back to my chat with Paul Ellis, the former chairman of the Nottingham Forest Supporters Club, who also became chairman of the Statue Fund in Nottingham.
Now, of course, when I put the fundraising group together for the statue in Nottingham, you kindly offered to be chairman. Not only were you used to doing the media interviews, as we said, but your accountancy background was important too. In the days before online fundraising platforms, did you have any idea at the time how long it would take to raise the £60,000 target?
No, not at all. It was fascinating, really, because I remember in the committee meetings we sort of had this very unbelievably small committee of just a few people with no experience of fundraising, particularly no experience of knowing quite what to do. Luckily, I had some financial background, so I knew what to do about the money if we got any. Mm. So I mean, it was easy to me to set up some spreadsheets and analyse what we got and do all that. I know it makes everybody laugh, but that was my skill that I could bring. Plus, I knew businesses and people, so I was able to at least approach some of them that others perhaps didn't know. So those was what I was able to offer, but other people offered completely different skills, which were amazing. But back to your question, did I know? So in those little committee meetings, we said, well, maybe we'll get the target the next day. Maybe somebody will just walk up and say, here's the money. Yeah. But more likely, it was going to take us a long time. And there were times after that when we started. No, we didn't know. perhaps I started to doubt, but other people I'm certain didn't, that we would reach the target.
Yes, yeah, there was certainly a determined effort. And we sold memorabilia, and there's an archive cutting here, pinning hopes on badge cash with a picture of you in your Forest shirt. Yeah. And Cluffy in his green sweatshirt. It's when the badges started to be sold in the shape of Cluffy's green jumper. And I was looking back, and we raised £14,000 from the badges and key rings that were sold.
Imagine how many badges we sold. I mean, we kept ordering more and more. And certain members of the committee were much better at badgering people to buy badges. Certain people would approach anybody, however famous or not, and make them buy a badge, you know. Yes. And but again, what a great idea. Certainly wasn't my idea, but fantastic idea, because £14,000 just from selling badges, it's just amazing. Yeah. And yes, it went over a period of time, but again, we made an order at the beginning, probably only of a few hundred. And I had to keep going back and ordering.
Yes.
And did you have them in your room, which by that time was full of all sorts of stuff?
Yes, it was full of sweatshirts as well later on.
Yes, I remember picking boxes of sweatshirts up from somewhere down Hayden Road, I think, and bringing them to you and coming in, and there was the whole of your back room full of boxes of sweatshirts.
Well, talking of sweatshirts, I've got an archive photo here, which I'll put on the website. And it's you with Brian Clough's former secretary, Carol. Yeah. And she came along one day to our sort of stall at the City Ground and bought one of the green sweatshirts.
That's right, yes. Yeah. Yes, our lovely lady, Carol. And what a great thing that she came to buy the jumper.
Exactly. We used to sell them before a match day. And I can see the clock in the background there, 10 to 1. Yeah. So we'd probably set up about 12-ish.
That's
and,
right,
And then selling all the bits and bobs.
Yeah.
So great memory. Looking back, what's your sort of highlight of that fundraising campaign, would you say?
For me, the highlight was actually the dinner we had at the council house. Again, because of contacts within the committee, we were able to use the ballroom in the council house to have a dinner. Then, obviously, again, through sources, we were able to get Duncan McKenzie to come and speak. And we had a radio presenter who...
Yes, Dennis Coath. Dennis Coath, that's right, from Central TV.
Yes, again, we were able to get some good people there.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, we got one or two other celebrities and players to come along and be there. But also, we obviously were able to sell a lot of tables. That, again, was where I at least was able to talk to banks I dealt with, solicitors, etc. And we were able to get some good tables. And I remember there was a guy who'd come from Hong Kong or somewhere like that.
Yes.
And we had an auction and he was bidding for everything, I remember. Amazing.
Well, it was amazing because with the auction and all the tickets for the dinner, and it was sponsored by Nigel Doughty, the Forest chairman at the time, we raised £9,000 just from that one event.
Yeah.
So it really was significant.
So that on one day boosted the funds tremendously.
Yes.
So, to me, seeing people there coming up and saying what a good job we were doing, how happy that we were trying to do that, that was obviously very gratifying.
And having raised the money, of course, the committee was then faced with the prospect of commissioning the statue with the help of the Clough family, and Mrs. Clough helped to choose the sculptor. You were involved in that process as well. I remember you doing media interviews when the sculptors were sort of being whittled down to one. And it was Les Johnson that won.
And what a fantastic job he did, because we remember at that time we were worried because other statues, not necessarily of Mr. Clough, but of other people, had been done and didn't look at all like them. So we were very, not lucky, we chose well between us, that's the committee and the family.
Yeah.
And I mean, even thinking back to that choice, we whittled them down to, I think, four people, and we asked them to send a small image of what they would have make. And these, I remember, came to my house because then Mrs. Clough and Simon came here to have a look, came to my house to make that final choice.
Fast forward to the actual unveiling, which Mrs. Clough did. Very emotional day, very proud day, really. Oh. And there's a picture that made it onto the front of the Forest magazine against Birmingham City. It was just a few days after the unveiling.
Yes.
Quite an iconic photo now. Loads of people gathered round it. It had just been unveiled. And your face is in prime position of all the people in the crowd. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I obviously positioned myself very well. No, that's the, I had no idea that's what's going to happen. But at least I am smiling. Yes. And obviously, I think there's a look there of a proud moment. I mean, look, I've said it many times to many people. What we did, and I'm not boasting, I'm just saying I'm very, very proud of the efforts of such a small amount of people to raise all that money to commission a statue, and a statue that is perfect in my view, and I hope will last for centuries to come. And every time I go into the town, I walk past it and think, I was involved in that. And obviously that's the proudest moment of my life.
Well, what a way to finish. Thanks ever so much, Paul, for sharing your memories. It's been wonderful. And if you want to see some of those photos, have a look on the website, and I'm sure it'll bring back some memories. Paul Ellis, thanks very much.
Thank you, Marcus.
And of course, thanks to you for listening. If you're enjoying The Green Jumper, please make sure you subscribe and give it a 5-star review. It all helps to continue these special pieces of Cloughy nostalgia. And don't forget to visit the tribute website, brianclough.com. It's non-profit making, and you can see more stories about the great man, and visit the Clough shop, where you'll find my books helping good causes. I'll also sign them personally for you as well. Thanks again, and I hope you can join me next time for more memories of the great man in the green jumper.